you know, that may be something that KPS could theoretically bring to the table, and all of a sudden you've got a new place in the world that manufactures one of the biggest sellers of golf equipment.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Golf Unfiltered podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam from golfunfiltered.com. You can follow me on Twitter at golfunfiltered. Send me an email, golfunfiltered@gmail.com. Listeners, obviously, if you've been following golf equipment news over the last couple of weeks, one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story, is the sale of TaylorMade Golf to an independent equity firm. And there's nobody else that I could think of better to have this conversation about the TaylorMade sale than Mr. Mike Statura from GolfDigest.com. And Mike joins us again today, the second time appearing on the podcast. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks. Is it a gold watch that I get for the second appearance, or a steak dinner at local TGI Fridays?
You know, I think we got to wait until the fourth time for the steak dinner, but I'll shoot you over a nice pen that I have on my desk, and you can use that whenever you write your next article.
Fantastic.
So speaking of articles, Mike, and listeners obviously know who you are, and they follow you very closely on with all the work that you do on the equipment side of things on Golf Digest, but you recently wrote a reaction piece, I guess it's safe to say, about the TaylorMade sale, in which you outline five major takeaways that we could expect from this deal. But first and foremost, Mike, before we get into that, when you heard of the official deal taking place, and I imagine that probably was before it was announced to many others, as news typically happens, What was your immediate reaction to KPS, which is an independent equity firm, purchasing TaylorMade?
Well, I mean, they weren't on the radar, so to speak, but if you sort of paid attention to kind of business and sports transactions, you might have caught a glimpse of them. I think, honestly, the first reaction was relief, because I think we've been watching this Adidas announcing the sale of TaylorMade and this whole process, which we thought probably would have resolved itself in, you know, 3-4 months, really dragged out for well over a year. But if you were watching KPS, there's another sporting goods company called Performance Sports Group, which is Bauer Hockey and Easton and Maverick Lacrosse, and KPS was sort of lingering in the background of an auction for that company, and, you know, kind of stepped aside and actually didn't bid for it at the auction. Nobody actually could match the bank price that was originally put up there. So KPS, I think, was interested in a sporting goods company, and I think when it got right down to it, I think they liked the numbers at TaylorMade a lot better. Mm-hmm. They got, I think, a much better deal, and I think they got a much better product to grow and essentially make money for themselves and their investors, which is what private equity firms do. So I think all along we had heard different rumors about you know, whether it was going to be foreign investment, whether China was going to get involved, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was going to be just kind of this a rogue millionaire, billionaire, which has happened in golf before. I don't think anybody thought that there was much of a chance of another sporting goods, you know, an Under Armour purchasing it. There were rumors that Bridgestone was eyeing it, and I think all of those were not really that close to happening. So I think for the last 6 months, we thought it was definitely going to be a private equity situation. I think we are sort of surprised that it's KPS, because they're not, you know, they're not the Bain Capitals or the Cerberus or you know, the usual KKR types that we mm-hmm. think would have been in this in this conversation, but it seems, you know, in talking to the TaylorMade CEO, David Abeles, seems to be that there were a lot of what I call emotional synergies between these two organizations. So it has all the makings of a good match.
You're right on in what you said, that this was kind of a name, KPS, that not many people, I wasn't aware of, and I think not many people were eyeballing them, as you pointed out. And you did have the chance to speak with TaylorMade CEO David Abeles to kind of get additional information about all of this. But, you know, Mike, one of the things that you point out in your article on GolfDigest.com was whether or not this purchase was a steal. And the rumored deal price, or the rumored price of the acquisition, was just under $425 million. Now, to me and you, that sounds like a whole boatload of cash, and I'm sure to many of the listeners here believe that as well. But maybe go speak a little bit on that point. Does that seem a little cheap, perhaps, for such a popular brand like TaylorMade?
Well, I mean, there's no question it was a good bargain for KPS, and you know, the $425 million price is certainly less than what we were originally talking about. You know, it was certainly north of $700 million at some point. I mean, you're talking about a company that 5 years ago had close to $1.5 billion in sales. Going, and again, you know, those numbers are a little overstated, because those numbers include Adidas footwear and apparel in there, but
right,
but you know, you look at it, it's really KPS putting up $200 million in cash, or maybe a little bit more than that, and some of it is secured note as well, and then there's contingent consideration in there. So KPS and TaylorMade have some sort of earnings benchmarks that will trigger payments. So, I mean, it's an interesting deal for KPS, because I think, you know, given their usual 5 to 7 to 10 year window of owning and operating a company, they will likely get more out of this deal for sort of less upfront money than maybe you know, we would have thought. And certainly, I think there was a lot of indication that Adidas was, you know, for whatever their logic, they had clearly made the decision that golf did not fit in with their plans. And although they have said, you know, we wanted to get a good price for it, or whatever, if your main point of the discussion is we're not considering selling these things, or it's not something we're thinking about, it's happening, is with more the tone. So I think you know, when they got a number that they figured they could live with, they pressed the go button as quickly as they could. But I think it's a great deal for KPS. I think there are some challenges, but this is not a floundering company. It is not a bankrupt company that they bought. This is, you know, clearly one of the top three companies, and depending on how you look at it, one or two, number one or number two sometimes, companies that they bought in golf. And I think there's really no indication that that's going to change. And so that's a tremendous opportunity to take advantage of a price that you can live with and sort of invest on top of, and maybe rapidly make back your investment.
What's interesting about this specific buyer in KPS is something that you point out as well in your article, about how they've basically purchased other companies, not in the golf space, but, you know, you've outlined a few in your article, such as, you know, a brewery you've outlined a few others, and then they turn around and they sell it to another potential buyer. And you suspect, or at least what you mentioned in the article, that this might be an option that KPS would go down in the future. Is that something that you still hold true at this point? And is that something that perhaps others are mentioning in the market?
Well, I mean, let's remember, that's what private equity firms do, all right? They're not really in it for the long term. They're in it to, you know, make something more attractive and, you know, not necessarily, you know, it's not Richard Gere and Pretty Woman where they're pulling things apart and selling it in pieces and they're the evil private equity firms. I mean, I think that's what one of the things that's really interesting about KPS is that they are see themselves really as a manufacturing company in a lot of ways. And they really get involved. A lot of the companies that they bought have been companies that are heavily involved in the manufacturing side as opposed to the, you know, the service industry or media companies or something like that. They're working with companies that make things, you know, whether it's a brewery like Genesee, which became North American Beverage, and Magic Hat was involved in there and a bunch of craft beers and stuff like that, or something, you know, bigger like MCI, which is a bus company, a company that makes buses. Mm-hmm. You know, they took that company, you know, the basic EBITDA on that company when they got it was they were losing $12 million a year or $12 million. And the EBITDA when they sold it was positive $79 million. So, I mean, they're, and then this was again in a very short window, like 3 to 5 years. So they were involved in management. They were involved in manufacturing. They made deals with Daimler AG to kind of, you know, bolster that brand. They kept the factories and 1,500 workers working. So they're really not the kind of investor that stands on the sidelines in terms of direction type stuff. They're saying, how can we figure out a way to make this manufacturing operation run a little smoothly? Now, let's be clear, TaylorMade's manufacturing is, I don't see it as a problem. I think it's a unique, and all of golf manufacturing is a unique challenge. And I don't know exactly what KPS will bring to the manufacturing part of TaylorMade because, you know, unlike a bus company or a brewery, TaylorMade doesn't, in essence, own the manufacturing of its golf facilities, right? It works with vendors in China and Taiwan and South Korea and those places. So there's some exclusivity, but they're also in essence vendors that are shared with some other manufacturers in golf. So it's a little bit more a stickier proposition for KPS to say they're going to go in and fundamentally rework the way golf clubs are manufactured. But I think you know, again, in talking to David Abley at the TaylorMade CEO, he thinks that is one of their strengths, that they will bring something to the manufacturing operation of TaylorMade that will improve efficiencies, maybe explore new arrangements that hadn't been considered. Mm-hmm. I think is it theoretically possible that golf clubs would be manufactured in a different place? You know, that may be something that KPS could theoretically bring to the table, and all of a sudden you've got a new place in the world that manufactures one of the biggest sellers of golf equipment. Again, that's not an easy changeover, but if if KPS is trying to bring efficiencies, they have, I think currently under their management right now, they have 103 manufacturing facilities. Now, none of them obviously are golf facilities, but that kind of portfolio suggests they manufacture different things from engine parts to household furnishings to thread. So it's a pretty broad-based universe that they're operating in. You know, who knows that a new set of eyes coming in and saying, well, why wouldn't you try this operation or look at this factory? Maybe that, you know, if you've been doing the same things the same way for forever, you lose the ability to see those things. And that's, I think, one of the things that KPS could bring to this. But I do think, bottom line, I don't think KPS is going to be owning TaylorMade, you know, for 20 years.
In addition to those potential efficiency improvements, and I agree with what you said about how you can obviously learn from one industry to the next and apply that and find redundancies so that you can apply it to your own industry. But in addition to that, you write that perhaps TaylorMade also benefits from a renewed focus. And as anyone who's ever purchased equipment on the golf side knows, TaylorMade's one of the major brands that has many different spinning plates that they have to keep spinning. They have iron sails, they have woods, they have balls. And I think it's no secret that, you know, a competing company, Callaway Golf, is overcoming and becoming a leader in at least two of those areas, with TaylorMade, as you point out in your article, growing a little bit in the golf ball market. But what other types of focus would TaylorMade benefit from this, or what other benefits will TaylorMade see in addition to those improved efficiencies?
Well, I think focus is, you know, there's another way to look at focus, and that is not being worried about the uncertainty of your situation. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, whether you're the CEO of TaylorMade or you're the third assistant engineer on putter design, there was definitely some concern. You know, obviously there have been budget constraints and cost cutting and layoffs and that sort of thing. So I think one element of focus is, okay, we're really done with you know, the sort of harsh cuts. I mean, if you look at what happened when Chip Brewer came to Callaway, you know, Callaway has really transformed itself under his leadership. But let's not forget that when he first got there, he had to do a lot of messy things. He had to cut some things. He had to really refocus the direction of the company. Mm-hmm. But once they got the, you know, the messy stuff done, and everybody in the building knew that, okay, we're done with that stuff, they really started rock and roll. And I think, you know, there's no reason that TaylorMade would not be in the same situation. I think they have some other challenges that Callaway did not have in terms of tour spend and that element. But I think focus is you usually get a better sense of what you should be doing when somebody else looks at you and says what you should be doing than just right. kind of sitting and self-evaluating. And I think that's clearly a strength of KPS is, hey, we own a lot of companies. We see how a lot of companies have run themselves into trouble or, you know, not maximized shareholder value. We can pick your place apart in a constructive way, maybe better than you can because you're too close to it. And so I think, you know, that said, again, talking to David Abeles, one of the things that KPS was impressed with was kind of a two-year business plan that Abeles has laid out. I think they're, you know, kind of in the first year of that or first 18 months of that. And, you know, I think the big challenge for TaylorMade and everybody else in the golf industry is we need to sort of reverse a trend in where equipment sales are, and we need to grow the market in whatever way possible. And you know, it's really hard to make your company better and be responsible for lifting up the industry at the same time. But I think, you know, whether you're Callaway or a Acushnet or TaylorMade, that in a sense, and you can throw Ping in there and Cobra as well. Mm-hmm. That in a sense is the charge that you've been given, is that you not only have to work hard to elevate your brand, you've got to figure out a way to make golfers and quite honestly, non-golfers more excited about golf.
It's hard to talk about any brand these days without mentioning what they spend on tour, and you alluded to that earlier. And of course, anyone knows who follows TaylorMade that they've signed two of the biggest names in the game, Tiger Woods months ago, and most recently Rory McIlroy, after of course Nike Golf got out of the equipment business. How much of this deal is tied to those two contract signings? I imagine that there's a major implication for both of them, or vice versa. Would this deal have happened, for instance, and I'm not sure if this is going out on too far of a limb, if Tiger played more often, if people were able to see him using their equipment more often? Does this deal change in any way?
Does TaylorMade become more valuable if Tiger Woods is a meaningful figure in the game? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say yes, but you have plenty of evidence to the contrary when you just look at his situation with Nike. I mean, over the last preceding 5 years, did having Tiger Woods, you know, let's not forget that he won a lot of events within the last 5 years. It's been, I know it feels like 100 years ago, but you know, he was PGA Tour Player of the Year not too long ago, and it certainly didn't invigorate Nike enough to make them want to stay in the game. So, you know, the Tiger thing is curious. I think, you know, someone could look from the outside and say the signing of Tiger Woods was another attempt to stoke the fires of making TaylorMade a more intriguing purchase. You know, it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. Abeles says that KPS has been part of the conversation for months. So if that's taking him at his word, you know, certainly KPS was aware of the Tiger Woods process and clearly aware of the Rory process.
Do you feel that KPS had any influence in that Rory signing?
You know, I can only guess. You know, the way you have to look at it is, assuming they've been having conversations for months, and if KPS said, you know, if you are really going to go ahead with this Rory signing, we're not interested in this purchase anymore. Mm-hmm. Is it theoretically possible that TaylorMade would have backed out of the Rory situation? I think that's fair to conjecture. I think it's also fair to say, if KPS and TaylorMade were having conversation for months and the Rory thing was clearly something that was being, you know, even if it was just talked about by TaylorMade, not necessarily asking for KPS's permission. The fact that KPS was aware of it, and by my reporting with in talking to David Abley's, was very much impressed that they were able to get Rory McIlroy to essentially switch mid-season to their clubs. I think it helped, and they endorsed it. Now, once they get into the weeds of having Rory and Tiger and Sergio and Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and John Rahm, Justin Rose, you know, then I think then it becomes a little bit more of a complicated question, and they have to figure out how that dollar pool exists in a healthy way. And then let's not forget the fact that there's a lot of other players that are being paid in some way, form or fashion. And that's not just on the PGA Tour. That's in Europe and in Asia to some extent as well. So, you know, the endorsement end of things is not an easy conversation. I think obviously Callaway feels like they had Rory lined up, and to lose him is a big blow, but I think it also is not the worst thing that can happen to a brand, because, you know, now Rory's getting an MRI every month and a half.
Right, right. That's true. That's true. We might be talking about a different type of curse before too long.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, one of the things that we're seeing a lot more often now in golf equipment, maybe not entirely too often, but it's certainly growing, is the idea of the luxury side of a brand. And obviously there are some brands out there that cater specifically to a specific group of golfers at a certain, you know, level of wealth. Do we feel that other brands at this point, including TaylorMade, are moving towards that? And I know that we're hearing rumblings of other companies going down that path.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that that segment of the audience is a viable one to pursue. Obviously, PXG has been successful by most measures. I don't know what the balance sheet looks like, but certainly they've had a presence in the marketplace that is meaningful. You talk to the folks at Cleveland Strixon, and they talk about Zexio with a lot of pride, that's a pleasant surprise for their brand, and that's again a high-end customer.
Mm-hmm.
Titleist introducing the C16 as an experiment a year ago and sort of re-upping it. I mean, again, it's not a fundamental part of Titleist business with the C16, but the fact that they essentially doubled their commitment in a second year shows that they think there's an audience there. There's a consumer worth going after. How big is that segment, and is it, you know, do you easily run out of those people because, you know, once they've made that purchase, they're not really going to make that purchase again, and we're not hatching multimillionaires by the hundreds these days in the U.S. economy, let alone most economies. I think the luxury end of things is a serious consideration. I think other brands are looking at how, you know, in terms of pricing structure, we want to have a set of irons in the north of $2,000 range, just like we have a set of irons that's in the $1,200 range and a set of irons that's in the $800 range.
Right.
So I think, you know, if you have the capacity to do it and not distract you from the meat of your market. You know, I think TaylorMade's going to look at that. I the big challenge is how you do that as a brand and not sort of diminish any of your products that are at a different price point. Now you can say, well, they're completely different customers, but if it says ABC Golf on it, and you've got a $1,200 set of irons and a $2,500 set of irons, the consumer is going to automatically think that the $1,200 set of irons with the same ABC Golf name on it is somewhat less impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Technologically, cosmetically, whatever way. And how you deal with that that challenge in messaging is interesting. You know, that's why it's probably better if you think of it as a completely different brand and move it away from ABC Golf, and you call it, you know, XYZ instead of, you know, linking the two. It's I don't know that it's proved successful for companies that have set it aside as a different brand, right? Zexio is,
right.
It's a reach for somebody to say, oh, is that Strixon? You know, okay. Mm-hmm. The C16 Titleist thing is such a small thing that I'm not really sure about it. When you look at it, the innovations that they've had in, say, the driver line quickly migrated to their main driver line in a lot of ways. So you didn't feel like you were giving up anything by buying the lower priced version, as it were. So I think this luxury thing, high-end brand has always existed in golf, but it's been a fringe player, and because of the oversized nature of Bob Parsons' character, I think he's made it a real selling point. He's become a figure that's actually, I think, bigger than the actual impact of his brand on the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you have that sort of presence, then maybe you can make a go of it. But I think, again, in the case of TaylorMade, right, you want to get the blocking and tackling right, exactly right, before you start doing other things.
Right.
And from KPS's perspective, you want to get them back to a position where they're dominating sales like they should in KPS's eyes. But I will say KPS's strategy in other areas has been to bring in other acquisitions. And I think that's probably going to happen in this case.
That would make sense, especially if that's kind of their MO and what their typical next step is. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Mike Statura from golfdigest.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Statura. And Mike, before I let you go, one final question for you. What, based on your reporting, based on the conversations you've had, what would you envision being the next step for TaylorMade? Is it for them to work with KPS and those other companies that KPS works with, or is there something else from the consumer standpoint that we will be able to notice as a result of this acquisition?
I would say the first thing that a consumer is going to notice is what is going to happen with Adams and Ashworth.
Hmm.
I think obviously consumers have a relationship with those two brands in some way or another. Those two brands have really faded and taken a back seat. I think, you know, it may not happen immediately. It may take a year, 18 months, maybe 2 years. But at some point, that's what the consumer is going to notice, that either Adams and Ashworth are being sold separately or Adams and Ashworth are being refortified and presented in a new way and become a legitimate part of the TaylorMade operation, as opposed to just a, you know, 2% part of the total TaylorMade share. I think the greater likelihood is that KPS will try to figure out a way to make those two brands, which still I think have value, to make those two brands relevant in some way. If it's 18 months, I think that's a fair number. I don't think it's going to happen immediately, but I think that's the first thing that consumers are going to really notice. The rest is just going to be TaylorMade being TaylorMade.
Fair enough. And I like Adams Golf, actually. I hope they end up doing something with them. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, that's Mr. Mike Statura from GolfDigest.com. Mike, thank you so much, as always, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Adam. Anytime.